Welcome to our podcast. Oh, you can look for exits, but there aren't any. Consider this your podcast of no return. So you might as well sit back and relax while you listen to tales of the odd, weird, unexplained, and just plain creepy. But beware, you never know what's lurking around each and every corner. Now here are your hosts, Todd and Sean. And they are middle-aged and creeped out.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 9. We are your hosts, Todd and Sean. Nate is our sound engineer. And yes, we are middle-aged and creeped out. Sean, what's going on, man?
Not too much, man. How you doing?
I'm excited to be recording again. It's much needed, as always, so looking forward to tonight's topic, especially.
Excited is an understatement for all of us, right?
Yeah, it's always a good thing. The weather outside, this is the first time in a while that we've had to say it's not as great as it's been, but...
I know, the last several we've been saying, oh, the weather's good, let's keep it that way.
Right,
warm, and now we can baseball, we can say the weather outside is frightful.
Yeah.
We've kind of like dipped back into winter for a second.
Yeah, it was nasty. I worked last night, so I left home, and I was on the interstate, and that's when the sleet started, so it was kind of doing the in-between. Wasn't that big a deal, you know, and then coming home late, 9:30, on the interstate, heading back to the west side of Indy, that's when it was kind of nasty and tricky. A lot more, for some reason, there was less traffic at 7 than there was at 9:30 or 7:30.
I think people were trying to avoid it too.
It was just gross, you know, and the intermittent wipers. It was just hard to keep, you know.
I got home from work and you could see, I mean, the grass is so green being spring.
Oh yeah.
It's April.
Yeah.
And then there was snow on top of it and it made it that green really pop. And I told my neighbor, I was like, this is beautiful, but something's not right. This does not look good. And there was on Facebook, somebody put a picture of a guy in his shorts mowing in their snow. And it said, the new term is schmowing.
Schmowing.
And it's when you need to mow, but it's going to snow.
That's funny. Yeah. It's just been a weird last couple of days. Yeah. And then when I got closer into my second gig, you know, local, it was not bad because I didn't have to deal with the traffic and, you know, the semis on the interstate just splashing the car. And like I said, just getting the wipers, trying to get those figured out was a pain.
Yeah. There was a lot of ice. I think they said Cleveland got 3 or 4 inches, you know, and some places up north got that. So, I mean, that is not what we're, my son called it Harrison. He said, it'll snow one more time for the season. I'm like, dude, we're done with that. Like that last big one we had, that's going to be it. And he told us this morning, he goes, called it.
Well, if it's not Harrison's fault, then
it's Harrison's fault.
So at the church, our maintenance director, our boss, Tori, who Nate knows, he told our volunteers, he goes, well, I think it's okay to go ahead and pull the snow sticks. And Dan, I think I've mentioned his name. He's the volunteer and retired. He goes, okay. He goes, now you know what happens though. And we're like, oh, whatever. And that was just like Friday. And so here it is. A few days later, it starts snowing.
Here we go.
So then Tori... Dan was saying that Tori texted him and said, hey, Dan, I'm going to need you to put those snow sticks back in tomorrow. So he was cracking up like, no, I'm not doing that now.
Yeah, I'd put away
all take them out.
All the stuff to clean off your cars, I'd put all that stuff away. So I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah, putting away the scraper. And
I think you posted it too, like the whole fact that now we're getting snow and everything's cold. It's getting down in the 20s at night. But by next Tuesday, yes. Don't worry, it'll be 82.
Yeah, I posted a picture on my personal that showed, I just did a screenshot of the Weather Channel app, and it said 79, exactly a week from now, 79. So it's like a 31
sounds
degree.
Sounds about right in the Midwest. Right?
And I said, Indiana being Indiana, that's kind of what it is. I've been here all my life, and it's consistent, being inconsistent.
Right? Yeah, it's
that's
good,
what it does.
Good for that.
Yeah. But no, I'm doing good, and just like I said, just hoping the weather gets nicer for tomorrow because Elijah has his third soccer game. So.
Yeah.
Practice got canceled tonight, so that's okay.
They play soccer in any kind of weather, though.
Yeah, right? He was kind of glad. Not that he doesn't want to play soccer, because he's loving it. He's having a blast, and they're really good. They're a really good team. He just wanted two nights in between because he's a tired boy growing. And he goes, I play a game tomorrow. You know, I play it. And I'm like, yeah, it's cool. So he was all right. You know,
yeah, it was
having another night off.
All the sports came to a screeching halt. You know, everything was happening. And then it was funny because we kept getting texts and emails like, well, we're going to play at this, you know, as long as weather pending. And Harrison's game was supposed to happen. And I thought it was the last one that they would cancel. And it was the first one. They were like, canceled. So
That's how it is.
Didn't even do practice inside or anything, and I was like, okay, sounds good.
So, Nate, what's going on with you, man? What's...
Oh, not a whole lot. Just enjoying this crazy Indiana weather, I guess.
Yeah. So you're in the same boat.
Oh, yeah. No, I went to the chiropractor last night and driving through all of it, and everybody's driving like it's slicker than snot.
Right.
And it's like, guys, it was 48
wet
an hour ago.
It wasn't. Right.
Yeah, the roads it's not sticking bad. To the road. Just drive.
Right.
But other than that, it wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
Did the chiropractor set you straight?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
All the chiropractors out there, Brian Jackson, will appreciate that.
Yeah. That's a good dad joke.
I know. I got
so where do you go? Like, how far is your chiropractor?
It's over in Danville chiropractor.
Oh, okay. So that's, yeah, it's not bad.
So, yeah, it's not a bad drive. And I just take all the back roads, so it makes it even easier.
Yeah.
Unless people
you take the Haunted Bridge, right? You could take the Haunted Bridge, right?
Oh, I could if I wanted
yeah,
to.
Yeah, it's kind of out of the way. But
Nate's like, not really. I just no, not this time.
I go by the county airport.
Oh, that's the municipal.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Is it still, there's a detour back there. Every time I go back there, I can't.
I don't think it's detoured anymore.
Oh, good. That's good. That's good to know.
I see the sign all the time, but I've still never been there. I've never driven back where it's at. So.
Oh, the bridge?
The airport.
Oh, the airport. Yeah. Yeah.
I just see it.
So go down 36 and see the sign.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's all I it's, usually see.
You blink, you'll miss it.
Yeah.
It's not huge.
Right. So. Funny. Well, anyway, awesome. Episode 9 already. I'm excited.
It is.
We're getting there.
We haven't broken 10 yet. We're going to do that soon.
Yep. It's coming. So before we get into tonight's topic, a couple of things I want to mention real quick. Guys, we have a drawing for a free coffee mug, and you know what you have to do.
Whoop, whoop.
Review the podcast. The mugs are really cool. My mom ordered one. Sorry. She ordered a magnet and a coaster. Sorry, she ordered the coaster.
I was
Brenda, who cuts my hair. Shout out to Brenda. She ordered a coffee mug, and I saw what it looked like Saturday when I took it to her. And oh my gosh, it's nice. It's very, very good quality.
I got mine last night.
Yeah, that's right. And then Sean, you got yours. Mm-hmm. So he
I haven't drank out of it. Jenna, she cleaned it. She's like, "Is this yours, or are we giving this to somebody else?" I'm like, "That's mine.
That's yours." Yeah. So yeah. Just you know, again, I know we mentioned it. We'll mention it again at the end of the episode, but. If you want to be eligible for a drawing or in the drawing for a free coffee mug, we would love for you to give a review, and it's much appreciated. And the last thing before we get into it, a guy I used to work with back in 96, his name is Sherman. He has his own podcast, and it is called, I love this name, Sunday Morning Toast and Jam. And what he had told me, because I didn't know he had a podcast, but it is every Sunday morning. And Sherman gives an exploration of an eclectic variety of music, and he touches on various series, themes, and whatever fodder the current times provide. And you can find him on SoundCloud, and I didn't get where else you can find him, but definitely SoundCloud. That was what he had advertised the most. But there
I
might
like
be.
That name. That made me kind of chuckle, actually.
Yeah, and he's got...
I saw that, but it's
and,
cool.
And, yeah, and I listened to the last episode. It's pretty cool, and the theme was Australian musicians. So everything from he played like AC/DC to Kim Wilde to Air Supply, you know, and what he does is he gives a little bit of information before he plays the song about
that
group.
That's cool.
Or
it's very eclectic,
yeah. Yeah, so it was going from 70s to 80s to 90s, yeah, all over the place. It's pretty cool. And his logo, I think he has like a glass of some type of little alcoholic beverage, you know, and so I think that's like the toast, mm-hmm. and then
that's
the jam cool. part with the music. So
that's very
I think,
cool.
Yeah. So again, give Sherman a listen on Sundays. It's called Sunday Morning Toast and Jam. So I think you guys will enjoy that. So
be a
anyway,
good way to start your Sunday, right?
That's right. So with all that said, Nate or Sean, you want to give us the? Do you have something?
I do. And I also wanted to say the studio, we're still at Nate's. So I wanted to thank Nate. I feel like last time, I don't know that we were like, you know, talking about Sam, the new podcast dog, and that we were here. But I think I want to make sure and thank Nate and Rachel,
yes.
too. Rachel's here tonight.
Yes, yes.
So they're gracious enough to be hosting us again. So we appreciated that.
No problem.
We've been giving so many shout outs that I wanted to make sure that we give you.
No big deal.
And he's got it all
set
up.
Though.
Yeah, we just show up with our little notes and Yeah, and always got to thank the wives there.
Yeah,
you know,
putting up whoever got the. Why are you guys staying up so late?
Exactly. I know. Yeah.
Right. Are you guys still at it?
Do you understand how long it takes?
This isn't going to work. Yeah. No. Nobody said that so far. Yeah.
But yes, thank you, Nate.
We're having
fun.
Thank
you, Rachel.
Yeah, we are.
So yeah, Sean, you want to let the listeners know what we're going to talk about in episode 9?
I do. And I posted this today and I got some really good pictures, and there is so much information in this subject that we're going to make it two parts. So we're starting with part one. Oh, this is H.H. Holmes. And we were having like a pre-discussion, and we didn't want to waste too much of our discussion because we want to save that for you. But there is so much to this. I don't know what to call him, but I'm going to call him a character, and that's going to be the nice way of putting it.
He's a character.
But I'm really excited to get to use words like dastardly and fiend. Like, how often do you get to say that? Like,
yeah,
I could think of, remember Wacky Races, you know, like Dastardly Dan. That's the only time I could remember like calling somebody dastardly.
Yeah, saying, you know, that dastardly deed. Yeah,
I even wrote down, I put dastardly and fiend, and I put fun with words.
that is great to hear those old-fashioned words to describe. Yeah,
because we're going to go over some of his names. I won't give them all away because there are so many.
That's
but like
fantastic.
The Archfiend was like
Archfiend.
They
yep.
called him that. You know, then they were pretty creative in the late 1800s.
Time frame. That was the wordage.
That right, was lingo. Yeah, one, yeah. I love it.
So we talked about wanting to set up a nice foundation for this. So we're going to talk about they're different. It's kind of like some of the other stuff that we've done. There's so many. This guy is so complex, and I'm sure we're gonna hit a lot of areas, but we're gonna probably miss a lot too. And I'm talking with my hands, right? It's a good thing this is just audio, right?
We need to record this on YouTube sometimes so we can see Sean's.
I do talk with my hands. I gotta keep them down.
I do too.
What do I do with my hands?
What do I do for?
Yeah, I don't know what to do.
But anyway, so yeah, where do we want to start, guys?
Well, let me go ahead and start with a few little...
What, stats? Know,
stats, yeah.
Oh, you know, that's a good idea.
Weird. Todd likes stats.
Todd does like stats.
And then, yeah.
And we're happy
Sean,
for that.
You pick it up from there.
Okay.
So this guy, this as you call him, character, man, that is being nice. He was born, so H.H. Holmes, born as Herman Webster Mudgett. That was his birth name. Now, that's a name. Herman Webster Mudgett. He was born in Gilmanton, New Hampshire, May 16th, 1861. And Sean had said that, yeah, speaking of that old-time lingo, this guy had all kinds of aliases and nicknames. He changed it, and we're going to get into it. He had eventually changed his name to H.H. Holmes. But he is called America's First Serial Killer, the Beast of Chicago. This one I really like, The Devil in the Windy City.
That is a good one.
Yeah, The Torture Doctor. And then, like you said, Sean, The Archfiend Judson. Now, I don't get the Judson part. Did you guys figure that out? Or?
No, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know that either.
Another one I found was Dr. Death.
Ooh,
Dr. Death.
See, I was sitting on that one. That was my favorite one.
Yeah.
I was hoping one of you guys would mention that.
Dr. Death.
It makes it sound like some kind of a cartoon character or a superhero villain. Yeah, Dr.
Right.
Death.
But yeah, this guy... I mean, good grief. I've got in my notes, because he had later on, he had changed his name to the H.H. Holmes, and that's what he's known by mostly, to avoid being found out, by previous scams.
Then
he was a huge con artist,
and we'll get into all that, yep.
The H.H. Holmes part of it is Henry Howard Holmes.
Henry Howard, yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Glad you mentioned that.
Well, and there was one of the videos I watched and stuff that I read, they said that they wondered because Sherlock Holmes was first published in that character came out in 1887. So it was around that same time, and it was becoming famous. So they wonder if he didn't like the Holmes name from Sherlock Holmes.
Right.
That's just they don't really know that, but.
Kind of makes
sense. It seems logical.
Yeah. Dr. Holmes, right?
And that's perfect. The time period, right? That, mm-hmm. You said 1887.
1887 was when I had to look that up because I wasn't sure.
Which is a year from, the Jack the Ripper. That was 1888.
Not that he's alive to hear us. So, I mean, he'd hear us on some level, but Sir Arthur Conan Doyle
wrote
the Sherlock Holmes series. Yeah. So.
I've listened to a few podcasts about him.
He'd say, what's a shout out?
he had an interesting life.
Uh-huh.
So what the, yeah. Anyway, so yeah, so this guy, this character, this crazy person, H.H. Holmes, like Sean said, a lot to get into. And like I said, we're going to be everywhere. And so we're just going to dive in. You know, one more thing I'll say, and then let these two guys take over, and then we'll just start adding whatever we got. He went to the University of Vermont, and he went there for a year. He was dissatisfied with the school after the year, and then he went to the University of Michigan and got into their medical and surgery school. So anyway, that's what I got to start out with.
Some of his childhood, you know, as he grew up and became this horrifying, demented person, he grew up like in a normal home with privileges, and I mean, they weren't rich or nothing, but, you know, he's lived in a normal, solid family.
Yeah, wasn't abused, you know? Wasn't tortured mm-hmm. himself. Yeah, you're right.
And then it was New Hampshire, for God's sakes, right?
Yeah. And then, you know, the only thing that sort of stood out was that he was unusually intelligent at an early age.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, I know there's some people that, you know, they're highly intelligent, and sometimes they use it for good, and other times they use it for bad.
Yeah.
So it's funny how extreme intelligence, you know, dictates sometimes which direction your brain goes.
Yeah. And, you know, they, to go along with what you just said, you know, they say a lot of the, criminals, like the mafia and mobsters, you know, a lot of them are kind of dopey and they have just street sense. But I mean, a lot of them have really good business savvy.
Oh yeah.
But they use it for the wrong things. Right. You know, they could have been legit business owners, and they could have done this and could have done that, but yet they just chose just to get into the criminal aspect.
And I think that's an interesting thing to think about. If he would have channeled all these things we're talking about, takes a lot of energy. Takes a lot of energy to keep up with everything. The wrong thing takes a lot of energy to do the right thing. But if he would have channeled it to do the right thing, you know, just think about what he could have probably, the good things he could have done.
Oh, he could have probably gone off and been a world-renowned surgeon, really. Mm-hmm.
I would have much rather been talking about him than that light, you know.
Yeah, and like you said, Nate, he would have made good money.
Yeah.
Still would have made, I mean, it's not like he's, you know.
Instead of scamming and scheming his way through life.
But it's kind of like that is what they like.
Yeah,
to do. They love chaos. That. He's probably like, yeah, I could make a great living doing legitimate work, like a surgeon or some type of doctor. Right. But it's that pull of the scheming. They get more out of that, I guess.
And
you know?
The thrill and the thrill. Yep. Adrenaline rush and whatever gives them the jolly of what they like to do, I guess.
When you read about this type of guy, like you said, it wore me out trying to, he had to cover so many things he did. And
well, the big thing that they hit really hard is he was an extreme con artist. Mm-hmm. And so it's like a lot of the stuff that you hear, do you take it for what it's worth or is it a lie? Yeah.
Because down to the very end of his life, you just don't know. And looking over all this, it is. Uh-huh. There's still a lot of question marks.
Well,
and we said this in our pre-discussion, he would be thrilled to death that we're talking about this and still confused. You know, that's just the fact that he's still in the public
because
discussion.
Because he's still conned. I mean,
he's still conned us.
Oh, yeah.
Conned everybody. You know?
Well, I mean, like the biggest offset is how many murders he committed. I mean, they're saying he confessed to 27, but the murders could have been upwards to 200.
Yeah, 200.
But you don't know because, you know, he'd confess that he murdered so-and-so and they'd find him in Florida in a retirement, mm-hmm. you know, still alive. So who did he kill?
Yep. They said it went down from two, like at the end, he was like, okay, so he killed two people. Then he took that away. Then there was 9 confirmed, maybe 10. And then there were 27 that he admitted to, but some of them were alive when he admitted to them. And then, like you said, it could be 50, it could be 100, it could be 200 plus.
Yeah. nobody knows.
Yeah. So it's the fun of all of that. This is also I have to point out that this was Nathan's idea to discuss this, and which is a great idea.
Well, I never knew about him. And I caught a documentary probably 4 or 5 years ago on one of the stations. I can't remember which. And it was an outstanding documentary. Yeah. And I never heard of this guy. And I was like, who is this guy? And it just, he's so bonkers. It just pulls you in. You're like, I got to know about him. What drove him to do all this? Because it's just crazy.
I had heard and I'd seen a little bit, but I didn't know. I mean, diving into it, there's so much more to it and tie-ins of the interesting thing. You're talking about when he was a kid. There are some places they talk about him being, you know, his dad was abusive And then other places are like, well, his dad probably wouldn't have been any more abusive than any other father in the 1800s. And his mother was also like really like super religious. And so she kept him, you know, kind of toeing the line in that way. Again, may not have been that much different than anybody else.
They could never find any definite evidence towards any of that. And it's like, they could have, but there's no evidence to support it.
Yeah. And they say he was like, he wouldn't make good eye contact, but he had strabismus where one of his eyes went in. And at some point in his life, he ended up with a broken nose. And so he was very, you know, he distinct the way he looked. But they say, he wasn't very good with people. But yet he went through a lot of women. Like, he loved women. So he was charismatic. So that's not really true either. But he, you know, obviously didn't care about people the way that he treated them. But it said that, like, when he was, what was it, when he was 13, certain boys dragged him into a doctor's office and just to scare him. And there was a skeleton in there, and they thought that they would really get him. And so, but that they said instead of it scared him at first, but after a while it started to interest him. Like, so they think that was his first pull into being interested in medicine and the human body and what makes everything tick.
Yeah, I read
that
too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It totally flipped on him, you know, gravitated towards it.
Well, his mom had there were reports that he did horrible things to animals and did surgeries on him. That's when he first started trying to figure out anatomy and all that kind of stuff.
And that was at a
young age.
And
then his mom said, no, he actually liked animals. So, but who knows? His mother could have been covering him for him as well, you know.
I saw also that at a young age, there were accounts that he was responsible for one of his friends' deaths.
Right.
So, I mean, and that started early.
That's still a big question mark.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I caught that because I did my research. I did 2 days worth. I mean, not full days, but obviously. But I caught that when I was going back through and just checking on some things. And I missed it the first time. I was like, was young. Yeah, that he got possibly killed this friend or kid, whatever who it was. Yeah.
He got married young, too, at 16.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what was his first wife's name? Clara. So, she just happened to be affluent.
Yeah. Weird.
Yeah.
This guy was all about money and skin. Yeah, just, he didn't, people were just a ways to make him rich and see what he could get away with. There had to be no soul in him as far as really truly caring about anybody other than himself. I mean, all these guys they're narcissistic and they're very selfish and
psychopath at least. Yeah.
He is the I mean, he's a perfect example of just whatever helps him. Mm-hmm. He's going to use man, woman, child, whatever. Yeah,
world's his playground.
Yep.
There's a certain amount of a percentage. And it's luckily a very small percentage of people that truly have no empathy, no apathy, no feeling for other people. They're just worried about them. Even throughout his life, it showed that he could turn it on. He can turn it on and make himself, I better look like I'm a real human being. But then most of he just tried to blend in so that he could con people, so he could coerce people into his needs.
I think he liked fraud and scamming and conning people just as much as the murdering.
As killing them, yeah.
I mean, it all went hand in hand.
Looked pretty apparent, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what you were saying, Nate, when we were before we started recording, you know, talking about, you can talk about it, talking about like the skeletons and what he would do with the
school. He would any of his victims. I mean, he did numerous things to all of his victims. It just depended on his mood of that day, what happened to you. But there's accounts that he would take some of his victims basically, you know, clean all their bones up and then sell it to a university for a skeleton chart, physical.
I think it's skeleton. Like $200, $300, which is a lot in that day and age.
Yeah, back then.
A lot for a full articulated skeleton.
So,
ages.
You're going to universities and all these other places, you may be looking at one of his victims.
Right.
Well, nobody knows how many people he did that to.
Right.
Yeah, he would basically just steal them or kill them and then use that that's when he started his insurance claims too. They said when he was going to school and with Clara, and then they had a young son together, and he was doing all these insurance claims, and he just, until he got, people in the family, there's only so many family members you can have and claim as yours on insurance before people start getting kind of wise to that. And that's when he had to move to Chicago, and he just left his, he left his first wife and, and his son.
And the funny thing, because I believe he has, he had a biological son and a biological daughter. Beyond that, I can't remember if he had any more children.
I'm sure he did.
He probably did. Yeah. But the
ones he let live, right?
They grew up normal. There's no mental anomalies with them as in H.H. Holmes. I believe his son actually, you know, grew up and lived in Florida and retired in Florida. And he was the oddball, the black sheep of the family. I mean.
Yeah.
Well, they say that.
Good thing you didn't pass on.
Yeah. That's a bad gene to pass on.
We won't talk about him too much because we're going to talk about him a little bit later, too. But his great-great-grandson, Jeff Mudgett, who's out there, and he started real, I think it was 2017 when he started talking about some of his theories, which we're going to talk about. But he didn't know until he was 40. That's one of the, there's a TED talk out there about with him and some other videos. And he talks about how he was 40 and his dad, or grandfather, set him down and said, told him as a family, like, you know, this was your great, great grandfather. And he said, I was 40 years old, well into life. And he said, that has changed my life completely. Finding out something that was hidden, kept hidden in our, as a secret. Obviously you can see why it was a secret in their family, but what a horrible thing. And he even said, he uses that as like the backdrop of the story. Of, can you imagine being 40 and finding out that your grandfather was like one of the biggest serial killers of all time? You know, and what would that do to you? You know, and he's perfectly normal person.
Yeah, he's straight up guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if you found out if you're 10 or you're 15, it'd be wow. But then you would you just grow up with it. But I think it'd be harder. Yeah, being 40 as an adult and you're just hearing this and it just shatters your whole image of your ancestor.
You had opportunities for stuff and someone else did some research and knew your background. You didn't get that job or get this or got to do that because
never thought about that.
Yeah. So I mean, you might have been like, man, why am I struggling to do this or do that? And it's like, but you didn't
you
know.
Have a black cloud.
Yeah, you got a black cloud and they're judging you on what that's your great-great-grandfather did, you know?
Yep.
There's a huge difference between famous and infamous.
Yep.
You know, he was infamous. I mean, even famous people can cast a shadow over somebody not being able to you know, succeed and fulfill their destiny. But having someone infamous, unless you want to make money off of it, but this, like, this great-grandson, it seems like he's trying to, you know, figure out his family history and kind of, he wants to put all the pieces together too of his great, great grandfather, which I think is admirable.
Yeah. I think he sort of has the same like attitude as us talking about it right now. It's interesting. It's his, you know, family who just wants to learn about it, you know, not in it to try to get fame and fortune and all that kind of stuff off of his name.
Yeah. And I respect that.
Fortune and glory. Right.
Yeah. Right. And I respect that because being the relative, you would want to get as much information concrete as possible instead of all this just crazy rumors and what isn't true, what is true. I mean, here we're driving ourselves nuts. Like, what is this guy? What did he really do?
Trying to pin him down.
Yeah.
I don't think we're not.
Can you imagine being the relative of that guy?
Either want to like, no, I'm not. You know, you just want to deny it and just hide from it or not have just say, nope, we're cutting ties. That's the past. Mm-hmm. Or you'd want to, what he's doing, try to figure it out. And one of our listeners, Eileen, said that she's met him before. He comes to Irvington every year and that's where they do a Halloween festival. And he comes there because that's where one of his victims, H.H. Holmes' victims, a little boy was found in an oven there. And there's a whole story that we're going to talk about, but he comes there and she said, and his point is that, you know, this isn't like, hey, let's celebrate. This is a wonderful man. This is, let's understand this. So, I mean, we can, I think the idea it would be was let's not let this happen. You know, there's a huge mental health issue here that good Lord, you know, but it's not, These guys are interesting to talk about a little. They're very creepy and it gets very dark, but it's interesting to kind of, we're also dissecting this guy's character and his motivations and it gets ugly, you know, 'cause you can't say, oh, you know, there has to be some good in this guy. By all accounts, there wasn't.
No.
I was going to say, in all your research, did you find anything that was redeeming about this dude?
No, there's nothing. Nothing.
I mean, really, not one
positive.
Thing. I, no.
Nothing.
But he did. Uh-huh. But he had to be charismatic enough and to be able to put on a show. He had to be.
Well,
there's an acting component to him because he got four women to marry him. I mean, how many people can pull that off? He had some children.
Again, he was just a big fraud.
And
though.
He was a big honey. He was a quote unquote ladies man, you know, to lure some of these, you know.
I mean, even some of these guys, like, I mean, I'm talking about just in general serial killers. Mm-hmm. And of course, now some are talking about H.H. Holmes. I can't remember the guy. It was in, I don't think it was Chicago, but he was in Illinois, the clown guy, John Wayne Gacy.
John Wayne Gacy, yep. Mm-hmm. Gacy.
He killed multiple young men, you know, in their teens and early 20s, you know, and buried them in his crawl space and all that. Terrible, horrible human being again. But still, he did children's birthday parties. And do you know what I'm saying? Like, not a good guy, not a terrible, horrible person. I'm just saying that I could at least find probably in a lot of the serial killers, you can find one thing that, okay, well, they did this for, and that, oh, that was nice. You know, this guy didn't do one thing that benefited anybody ever other than himself. I mean, he wasn't like this horrible beast, this killer, but then he ran a charity of some type, where at least
ran an orphanage or
where, yeah, okay,
like
that,
a cover,
it did benefit.
Yeah.
He did nothing. I didn't find anything.
No,
maybe
I
listeners out there are like, well, I read this and it was,
I don't
this
think
was
so.
No, I don't.
It's funny you bring up John Wayne Gacy because that I don't guy, dislike clowns. I don't have a phobia or whatever, but, I do. You know, I remember as a kid that creeped me out big time.
And that picture, and you know, oh,
clowns.
Yeah, like smiling. And
clowns are supposed to be fun and enjoyable, and there's a huge, weird, creepy side to him. And he, like, as a kid, I know that definitely did that for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I think warped
the whole idea. Yeah.
I think the whole interesting thing about all that is about how they think and stuff, because we can't fathom how they think. There's no right or wrong to them. They think
it's very
what they're
warped.
Doing
it's
is whatever kind of high or whatever it gives them.
Yeah.
But to us, it's warped and it's weird, but to them it's normal.
Yeah.
And it's just so mind boggling trying to understand all that.
We talked about this whole subject being a puzzle that we're going to try to put together, but it's not going to be able to be a complete puzzle, but that's the way he wants it. That's the way he passed this world that way.
The impossible jigsaw.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. That's a perfect way
any
to put
serial
it.
Yeah. killer, but yeah, that's for sure this guy.
Yeah, I mean, because you listen to the Ted Bundys and John Wayne Gacy and Richard Ramirez, all these famous serial killers over the decades, and all the horrible things they do and their story and their background and how they grew up and what happened when they became an adult and maybe what their trigger was or whatever. And it'll never make sense to us, like you said, Nate. We can't in our heads, our minds, what is going on? What makes the, you know, this guy, it's just another level, like two, maybe three levels. It's just, he did everything and anything to people to get what he wanted. And I just, and the methods and the crazy, it's just crazy. Yeah. That's why I was, when you mentioned, hey, we got to do H.H. Holmes, I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you start doing research. Yeah. If anybody wants to do more research or watch a documentary, I encourage you, because you're going to, other than just listening to us in our notes, it's like, wow. It takes you all kinds of different crazy places, you know, and you're just, and I was in awe, actually.
It makes your jaw drop. You just, whoa.
This dude.
Who is this?
Yeah,
well, that's why I got caught the very first time I watched the documentary. I'm like, who is this guy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and then obviously the headline, America's biggest serial killer. It's like, oh, I don't even know who this is.
I didn't even know about 3 or 4 years ago, and I heard a podcast, and I'm like, H.H. Holmes? How can I not? You know, everybody's heard of Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
And everybody's heard of, like I said, the ones from the 60s, 70s, you know, Ted Bundy and Ramirez and all those guys, and I had never heard of this guy. And yeah, okay, it's back in the 1890s, but it's not 1490. As crazy as this guy's life has been or was, I mean, how did I not hear this in some type of story, you know, passed down or whatever? I don't know.
That's the other thing that makes this complicated, is that when it happened, even though it's coming into the modern times, but it's still before the Titanic sank. It's still before World War One, obviously before two, and just after the Civil War. So you have it in kind of all this, in a historical sense, it is in this really interesting period. And at the backdrop for where he, when he moved, when he left his wife and his son, his young son, he came to Chicago. And Chicago, I know there was, there's the whole story, and I don't know if you guys have more details about where he came into possession of a drugstore. Mm-hmm. And he, there's that with him, that's very difficult because there are, after he died, after he was hanged, there was, you know, the press got a hold of it and they made something sound awful. So there's the most extreme form of H.H. Holmes, which we'll talk about. Then there's people that come by and say, oh, you know, he wasn't too bad. And some of that was just, you know, blown out of proportion. But it still begs a lot of questions with this stuff. It doesn't make sense. Well, like if he was just this peaceful guy that he had this, you know, this building with all these weird rooms. Yeah. It doesn't make sense. And he was just trying to con people. I think there was so much more to it.
Well, so that's when he adopted the Dr. Henry H. Holmes moniker.
When he came to Chicago.
When he came to Chicago. Yep. And
to escape. That's what I have. That's when he changed his name.
And then eventually got, you know, buddy-buddy with the owners and got them to agree to sell the pharmacy to him.
Right.
And then they mysteriously disappeared.
Yes.
Yeah. Most of the account, like that's what the accounts, one person I was listening to, and they're like, oh no, there's records that showed that those people still lived into the 1900s. But most of the accounts I looked into said that they disappeared and were never seen from again.
Yeah.
So it's, I feel like that's the
whole con artist part of it too.
Like, exactly. Which one was it? Yeah. But so he ended up with a drugstore. So he had drugs that he could utilize. He had all kind of different, you know, medical stuff that he could had access to. And then that's when he built the castle. And that just makes it sound really kind of creepy anyway.
Yeah,
but he started building this building, which no longer exists. Yeah. The third floor caught on fire at one point and then it burned down another time. And so it doesn't exist anymore. That makes it also complicated. There are pictures of it and what it looked like. And then there's diagrams from what everybody, you know, the police and the press were allowed in, and people stormed the place and everybody has a certain, like, different accounts of what it looked like. But he built this building. It was three stories. The main floor had businesses. There were like jeweler and a barber and all these kind of different shops. The second floor was basically, I look at it as like a psychopath's fun house. Rooms that don't make sense. They say that he built it this way because he was trying to go from one construction person to another, and then, you know, he wouldn't pay them and say, and you did a bad job.
Yeah, and he is hiding materials.
Right.
But
he would have these rooms. Some of them didn't have windows and some of them had these offshoots and some of them were airtight. And supposedly he had the ability to control the thermostat, heat up rooms and gas into rooms.
Yeah.
And
he had some of them airtight and plumbed for gas.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so that's the second level. And I believe his bedroom was on the second level, right? Like in all this mix.
I think that's where it was at.
And then the third floor, supposedly, I don't know exactly what was going on with it. It, like I said, it ended up burning at one point.
So I have it as so the first floor was the storefront.
Yeah.
Then the second floor was the retail spaces. And then the third floor was actually supposed to be hotel rooms.
You're right.
Yeah. Well, because the fair.
The Chicago. Yep. I was getting into that.
Yeah.
So the Columbian Expedition, which is the 1893. We talked about this the last time. The World's Fair, which was a big thing. And it was really to put Chicago on the map. It was to put the United States on the map because France had been the big holder of the World's Fairs before that. And we talked about the World's Fair last time being trade shows that were, or trade fairs that were all the way back into the Middle Ages. So this was a big deal that it was coming into America and that Chicago had won out over New York City. So they had this white city that was built 7 miles outside of downtown Chicago. And it took them a couple years to construct. It was basically supposed to be like, Venice, you know, on the water. And they did, it's funny because it was supposed to be this technological wonder, but the way they built it, they had to use archaic ways of doing it and dangerous different techniques. So, but it was beautiful. And I actually have a girl I work with. She gave me a book that was from that time period and has all the pictures of all the buildings because all the states had their own buildings. They had, certain countries had their own buildings and it said, I mean, it was miles walking to go to all these different expeditions, but they had all these buildings and none of the buildings were meant to last except for one, which is now the National Science and Industry Museum. So it's still there.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
It's cool. This Jackson Park. But it was a swamp before they did the fair, and they actually came up with the idea that, hey, we're going to have to dredge the swamp and get rid of all this and make this into a beautiful park, and it mm-hmm. still is. But so all these people converge for 5 or 6 months for this world fair, and guess who's got this castle?
He's
ready?
Building his castle, which it went by different monikers. I mean, Murder Hotel, Murder anything.
Murder Castle.
Murder House. Yeah. Murder. Yeah.
The Murder Castle. Yep.
Murder Castle. Yeah. Castle.
That's my favorite.
Like
I like
big
the
ones. Yeah. Or H.H. Holmes Castle, you know. Yep. But he saw that, you know, the fair's going to be there. And so he changed, from what I saw and have researched, he changed directions because it was all going to be apartments. And
right.
He's like, no, hotel.
Yeah.
I'm going to have all these people here for this fair. Perfect opportunity to get all these people in here. Mm-hmm.
They need a place to stay.
Yeah.
So it's like you don't have to average. I mean, just have a place.
Yeah.
Available.
Hotel.
Here you go.
Here you go. Yeah.
It's like,
and there was
easy
at least
pickings.
The mm-hmm. reports were there were at least 100 people that came up missing from the fair. I'm
yeah.
sure there were probably more than that. Even
I
honestly.
Saw that. I read that.
And you know, families don't know exactly where you're at. You get to America, and you know, or even people traveling within the United States, people may not know exactly where your family member was going to stay
yeah.
during this World's Fair. So at least 100, and there was 100 that came up missing that they tracked back to the castle. And so that's, you know, but then there were other reports to say, oh, it was never really a hotel. And I don't believe those reports because there's so much surrounding that showed that he did lure people in
mm-hmm.
and to this hotel. But they said, you know, can you imagine coming up across this guy that seemed he was a doctor and he was handsome and he was charismatic and like, oh, I have a place for you to stay. Come and stay in my hotel.
Yeah, what kind of threat would that be? You know?
Yeah,
you know,
no big deal. It went through, there's one video that was it was humorous, but it was showing about like what it would be like to be somebody that just got invited into this castle and you get sealed into this room that all of a sudden, you know, you basically end up in this, you know, having to take this little chute and the chute sends you down into this little mm-hmm. box and then you're stuck and it, you know, that you get gassed and you're
yeah,
done.
They said out of every way that he would, well, I mean, he would torture, he would, perform surgical things on people, dissect them. They say, out of everything, you're lucky if you got gassed.
Right, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
That was the good thing.
I mean, you get killed, you don't know what's going to... Yeah,
yeah.
At least the pain wasn't going to be, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not, I had... That's exactly what I had. They said that, yeah, you were lucky if you were just gassed and, you mm-hmm. know, stuck in one of those rooms that, yeah, you couldn't get out and you're just... He had the pipes fitted mm-hmm. in there to shoot the poisonous gas, but man. Said this guy... Yeah, you know, well, and going along with the rooms, like, you know, none of these rooms were really used for what they obviously were.
No,
you know
they're
what I mean?
Totally
they were,
designed by him
yeah.
for his fun.
And going back to the workers, you know, he didn't want any workers to catch on to what he was, you know, so he
yeah,
would
he
fire,
fire
them.
Him. Yeah.
You know, they'd work for a little bit, fire them, yeah, and not pay them, too. So there's the mm-hmm. scam part or, you know, saving the money part.
Which the government was on him.
Right.
Because
he got sued
stuff.
A lot.
Yeah, he would get sued. So, I mean, he was in the.
Yeah.
You know.
Had a ton of lawsuits. I'm just trying to find my notes here.
A lot of notes.
Yeah, so I apologize. Like you were saying, that the chute, you know, the body just slide down all the way to the basement, and what he had was acid vats. And,
oh, yeah, I forgot about the acid.
And that quick lime, yep. and yeah. what that would do is it helped dissolve the bodies, and then where he could dispose of them, and then it's easier to strip the flesh. And
then I believe he had an oven in there, too.
Yes,
would,
yep.
You
yes.
You know,
sure
like
did.
A crematorium.
Yes.
There's yeah. that little diagram, and it's kind of, it's not funny, but it's a cute little diagram
open.
Of all the, yeah, of all the.
I've
the
seen dungeon. That many times, and there's different ones, but I think that's so fascinating. I mean, it's so scary and creepy that these poor people had to.
Oh, and he had like sight holes, you know, like old scary movies, and you see the eyeballs moving in the picture
yep.
or whatever.
Where
he did that stuff.
He would listen to and watch yeah. his victims. They say,
well, yeah, and he knew exactly where everything was. I mean, he knew
there were,
how to get around.
Some of these videos would recreate what the sound would be like. Somebody yelling for him to let me out, and the men and the women. There was. I have this book, and I got it actually from work. It's called The Weird, Scary, and Unusual. And has a really good part on him, and I'm not going to read it all, but this was where it kind of dives into where we're talking about right now. But this gives you the chills just listening to this. Advertised as a lodging for the World's Fair tourist, the building opened in 1892. Holmes placed ads in the newspaper to rent rooms, but also listed fake classifieds calling for females interested in working for a startup company. He also placed ads for marriage, posing as a successful businessman in need of a wife. Any woman who answered these fake ads were interviewed by Holmes, was told to keep everything a secret, and was instructed to withdraw all funds from her bank account in order to start a new life with him as his worker, wife, or whatever role he had offered. Holmes was a brilliant liar and quite the charmer, and naive 19th century women fell for it. Once they passed Holmes' tests, these women became his prisoners, doomed to meet their grisly ends. Gas pipes were secretly installed throughout the house, with nozzles that piped noxious fumes into the rooms. Holmes would turn on the gas so that the victim du jour would drop to the floor unconscious. While she was out cold, Holmes would usually rape her. That just sends chills in my spine. Then send the girl down to the basement via the chute. Once there, he would perform experiments on her at his dissection table or torture her with various equipment. He reportedly listened to the screams of victims from an adjacent room. Once he had brutalized the unfortunate soul, he would dump her body into a vat of lime acid to completely destroy the evidence. Other times, he sold bones and organs to contacts in the medical field. Holmes murdered at least 22 people in his home, mostly women, though every once in a while, a worried male neighbor or a concerned relative looking for a missing young woman would get too suspicious for Holmes' liking, and they would go missing themselves. That's just a little part of it. That, yeah. To me, but that's like...
He's the devil you do not want to tango with.
Right. Oh, any rape, too. Like,
oh, yeah.
And that's there was a picture of one of these videos a guy was showing, and he showed this what he would look like dressed up in his doctor stuff and with a scalpel, and he had this woman just hanging there naked, and it was like, ugh. That's where it just... You're getting into territory where it's like, this guy was a sick, and I'm not, like I said, mm-hmm. we're going well beyond character at that point. But it's just really, really nasty guy.
Yeah, he was. And I think that's still...
So it's really hard nice for me when people say, well, it wasn't that bad what he did. And I was like, you know, and maybe the press made him into more of a devil, but he did that to himself.
Maybe people that don't think that he was all that bad watched the PBS special on him or something.
Down.
Yeah,
hosted by Elmo or Big Bird.
yeah. It's like, no, he wasn't that great of a guy.
Again, I didn't find anything appealing about this guy.
No,
he was really a good-hearted man. I wanted to mention that there maybe you did, Sean, that the World's Fair was 1893.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because
yes.
I remember you mentioned an episode or two ago, and I'm like, oh wow, I didn't know that was when the World's Fair was. So yeah, 1893, and then he had bought the property in 1887. And that's when he started doing his construction. But I had in my notes that the thing, obviously, about the World's Fair, that was, what'd you call it? The World's Columbian Exposition.
The Columbian
named
Exposition.
Named after Christopher Columbus. Mm-hmm.
Yep, because it was the 400th anniversary.
400-year anniversary.
Plus a year, the time it took to get it all together.
Right, 1492. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting. I didn't know that. That was that's why they chose, it was the 400 year anniversary, and you know, years and stuff when things happen interest me. I don't know. Thought that was kind of cool. They also said, well, and we'd already talked about like suffocation, you know, by either, you know, he would use overdose of chloroform, overexposure to lighting gas fumes. And then he had the, you know, trapping the victims in an airless vault and just let them, run out of air and die. But they also said, this is even worse. I mean, not any of these are great, but then again, like I said, you know, maybe if you just kind of, if you're going to die, mm-hmm. I'd rather just pass out and die instead of tortured, I guess. But also said that he used starvation and rumor was that he did burn some victims alive in his murder castle.
Right.
And I thought that's horrible. I mean, just laying there, you're starving or you're,
well, I've seen, I you're saw
burnt
one.
Alive? Like,
yeah.
Come on, man.
Well, I saw one that, said that he would skin people just see what they'd do.
Yeah.
Like,
oh God. What?
You have to see past that. Like, I can't, I can watch a documentary. I can watch a medical show. Right. And they're doing the surgery and I can watch that, you know, or I can see him cutting a patient open and they're, oh man, I got the chest. Sorry, listeners. Yeah. But you know, I mean, all that goes with it.
Doing a heart surgery or something like that.
But to have this guy and have maybe especially a live victim, and you're doing this to a person, like they have to see past that. Like I couldn't even begin to do that. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
trying to get in their minds,
uh-huh.
the physical part of it too.
Have you seen any of the Hellraiser
movies?
How
do you do that? I've seen the first one.
This is totally him.
Yeah.
I mean, he is the pinhead. Yeah. I mean, it's
so gross.
How do you do that? How do you physically do that to a person? I don't care. Or animal. Anyway, mm-hmm. how do you do that?
This brings up an interesting point.
To not feel that or to be grossed out, to be.
You'd have to feel something, but what is he feeling?
There's a history.
There's a history
that goes beyond, like, and I'm not making excuses for him by any means, and this is also not against
You're an apologist.
I'm an apologizing. No, yeah, right.
Just kidding.
I'm sorry.
Not in the least. But as far as, and this is not to be against any kind of doctor or surgeon or anything either, but, you know, medicine, it's still called a practice. You know, it is something that had to evolve. And before there was anesthesia, before they figured that out, thank God they finally did figure that out. But they used to do public surgeries and people would come and it was almost like, you know, yeah, the idea of the gladiators in Rome, you know, you're just, oh, let's see death and destruction and somebody hurting, you know, and blood. And that's what public surgeries were done without anesthesia and the idea was, let's see how fast we can get this done. And people would be in absolute excruciating pain. And I would like to thank the people that gave them, oh yeah, it's okay to do this, but I don't think that was always the case.
Well, I mean, the doctor is trying to heal whatever's wrong with them too. So
it was
a spectacle.
It was a sport to them.
Yeah,
and I didn't live in that period, so I can't really judge that person. But, and then they say some people that, like, it takes a special person to be a surgeon, and God bless surgeons and I'm thankful for what they do, but you have to be a little bit off to want to cut through somebody's, you know, flesh and to be able to go in there. And again, I'm saying this with the utmost respect,
I know.
But they say that some people that if you didn't channel it, just like him, you know, maybe if he would have channeled this, he could have been the world's best surgeon, but instead he went off the cliff and ended up, there's
the
that
secret.
Fine line of sanity
and
insanity.
There's a conscience thought in your head saying, I have to do this in order to save this person.
Right. Exactly.
It's not, I wonder what would happen if I do this.
And you're following a Hippocratic oath. That's what I've known so many surgeons and doctors, so I would never suggest that they're all psychopathic killers.
Yeah.
But there is that part. There's that switch in you that obviously turned in him that was, ugh.
Okay, yeah. So we all have kids. What if one of our kids got something in their leg, you know, something, I don't know, something that got in there and you had to cut it out, you know what I mean, or it could go, you know what I mean, get infected, whatever it is. I'm trying to think of a situation, but there's a difference, like, oh my gosh, Elijah, and so I better cut it.
Mm-hmm. I've done that with splinters.
To relieve, to help, right?
Yeah.
And maybe I had to dig deep, you know, but because I know what the result, I know what the purpose is.
Correct.
The result is to help my son or my daughter so that's not embedded, it doesn't get infected, it doesn't hurt, you know, versus let me just cut into him or somebody just to see, for the fun, for the pleasure, to see
what's
in
there or see how it works. Or,
so your mind would have to, like, oh my gosh, I better do that. And I think it'd push you to that. You got to do what you got to do versus, hey, let's just cut people open for the heck of it. Or especially when they're alive for the pleasure. That's not, I mean, then that's when I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
I could do to help if I had to, but not to do it just for a sport, you know, just to, for the,
well,
yeah,
I think
for torture,
I've read like a report or something like that they, you know, delving into the serial killer and their minds and why they do that stuff is it has to be, and I believe they said it's like an euphoric sexual satisfaction.
Sexual.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's not the case.
That's a heavy driving force.
Yeah.
If that's what they're receiving from doing this.
Right. And there's different, lots of different reasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of it is sexual, but then if it's not, there's something they're getting out of it.
But to go back to like your kid, something wrong with them. I remember we were at the beach. I can't remember if it was Parker or Dane, my two boys. Hi, Parker and Dane. I don't think I've ever said hi to them yet.
Yeah, good.
But
a little shout out there.
That's cool.
Yeah, a little shout out.
They're listeners.
One
too.
Of them. Yeah, they are.
Are
listeners.
They?
Yeah, they enjoy.
Well, Parker and Dane, thank you very much. Thanks.
And one of them, we're at the beach, and one of them got a piece of shell shoved up in their heel.
Hmm.
Ooh. Could not get it out. So, I mean, I finally had to, like, take my knife and, you know, I dipped it in alcohol. I tried to be as
sterile
as I possibly could. I had to cut a little bit of their heel so I could get some tweezers in there and pull the shell out.
Yeah.
And it was long. I mean, it was at least a quarter inch long. And they're, that I is, mean, they're like walking in pain, just like, oh, it's in there. Oh, I can't walk. Oh, you know, I mean, so I was like, I have to do something.
Right. Yeah. Perfect example.
Yeah.
Dad to the rescue.
Just to cut into him for the heck of it.
Yeah.
You would be
there's,
like,
there's a purpose. There's
a fine
your
line.
Your brain
right?
has to have a different approach and but has a different mindset.
H.H. Holmes did not have that by any means.
Can you,
no. So yeah, there's a lot. Like I said, we took a very, that's a fascinating, you know, trip around the psychology of it.
I think that's but just as creepy as just the axe.
It is. And I think sometime we need to cover like, you know, we have come a long way in medicine and, you know, our medicine is, thank God for it, and we have wonderful things. And there's a lot we don't know, tons we don't know or understand, and that's okay. But we've built it on the backs of probably some pretty gruesome things, to be honest. And, some of it's accidental. You know, Leonardo da Vinci, you know, was explored and you know, also did inventions. But with his medical knowledge, you know, we've come a long way, and that was, you know, I mean, you just think about it, it's a blink of an eye now. But we have really built on, you know, and also war, the times of war, that's where technology goes, booms, and then there's also medical booms and medication booms, surgical booms that we learn, hey, we learned this about the human body. Let's do this next time and just, you know, outside of the warfare.
So you're saying it's not good to have an arm amputated with chugging a bottle of whiskey and biting on a stick?
Probably not.
So I'm thinking, you know,
Civil War era.
So my favorite movie is Tombstone, and I
great
was thinking
movie.
Right before he said, it's just I know all my son, 10 years old. He knows all the lines. We go, you know, and the scene where Virgil, the older Earp, you know, he got shot, and the doctor's trying to hold him down, and it's like, it's whiskey, and just, but he's just trying to pull the bullet out, you know, and he does get it, but it's oh my gosh, just think, and that was just, you know, 100 and some years ago. I'm like, thank goodness for,
anesthesiologist, you earn your keep.
I did. When I was in banking, I did loans for the last 5 years of my banking career, and had a woman come in. She was an anesthesiologist, and you know, when she was applying for, I think she was buying two cars, and this is 98, 99, and she made some good jack, right? Some good money. That's who I want to, I mean, I want everybody, if they're working, I don't care what people make, I'm just saying, but she's one of them. I'm like, yes, I want you to make as much, because there's a lot on her shoulders, and she's got to keep the insurance, you know, the malpractice. Mm-hmm. My dad always used to say, anesthesiologists, doctors, he goes, pilots, I want them to be happy. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
I want them to
be in a good mood,
there's a
right?
lot,
be happy, make a good
our
paycheck.
Our lives are in their hands, yes. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, but I'll never forget, I'm like, when she left, I was like, yes, I want her to be well compensated. She can, you know, make or break.
I can attest to that. Yeah.
But yeah, that's just, again, like I said, that mindset of what would happen. This is like it's going to be fun to torture these people and cut them up and do all the, no thanks. And if we don't know all this stuff, but if they said, you know, the rumors were even burning them alive. Can you imagine putting somebody in an oven or lighting them on fire and they're alive, like just the screams and the pain, like, and knowing you're putting somebody through that.
If they're alive by that point, if you sat there and tortured them and did this and that.
To me, I think I would, if that was happening to me, I think I would hit some kind of a psychological wall where you just pass out, you know,
Sure. Yeah. Your just, mind will take care of yourself, your brain. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just shut it off.
Yeah.
I
just
guess
shut
you get
everything
to a point
off.
Where you're just,
yeah.
You can't.
It's a psychological point break, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this guy that was mentioned a lot, this Benjamin Peitzel, this guy that he met
him in jail.
Was it jail?
Yeah.
So in my notes,
it said he was jailed at one point
because he did have a criminal past
for fraud.
Yeah,
This is H.H. Holmes. He was in jail for caught on fraud. And he got thrown in,
his first and only time.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe so.
Because I had it that he had met him at the chemical bank building, and he was a carpenter.
Nate, are you talking about Marion Hedgepeth?
I'm talking about Benjamin Peitzel.
Yeah.
I think you got him. Yeah, I got the.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I did.
Both
of them are like right here next to each other on my notes.
Yeah, no, I got you. No, that's fine. Yeah, but he had met this dude at the chemical bank building and then named Benjamin Peitzel. And I guess he was a carpenter by trade, but he had a criminal past as well. So, of course, criminals kind of gravitate to each other, you know. And he was So he had a guy willing to help him with the schemes and kind of be a
help him build rooms or whatever.
Yeah, this dude. So this guy wasn't, I mean, any better. He was just a crook, and so he relied on him to help him with his nonsense. You know, finding victims and to cover it up and the scams and.
Did you guys? There was also a, I think it was in the barber. No, the jeweler. It was the jeweler and his wife. I forget the jeweler.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And her name was Julia or Julia, I believe. And then they had a 6-year old, and he ended H.H. Holmes fell in love with her, and they ended up having an affair. And so then the husband, I think his name is Ned, and he, you know, said forget this, and so left. And then she started helping him with his schemes, and they ended up the woman and then the 6-year old ended up dead.
Right.
Yeah, they're so, one of his
they found
lovers
it,
or whatever.
Right.
Child
yeah, there's
that he
so many of them. And then that 6-year old, the body was found in the basement.
Yeah.
So just I mean, but this Peitzel guy, like if you hang around him enough, like some people were fortunate to get away. You know, you could stay in that hotel or whatever and come and go, but it was probably rare, you know. And then all four of his wives end up living, or two of them, right?
Yeah.
I thought it was two.
I know his first wife
two.
Survived. He you
left
know,
them.
He was violent towards her, but
right, Claire.
He never
killed her.
That was supposedly the love
child.
Of his life, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd have to look
right,
a little
two,
deeper
yeah.
on that, see which ones made it and which ones didn't.
That's the thing about this guy, not just the crimes and the all that goes with that, but the relationships and yeah, like the women and these friends, I guess, in quotes. Just yeah, he had no problem meeting people and
that's why this guy is a two-parter, right?
Yeah,
this guy went well when Nate said, you know, weeks ago when we were going through different content ideas, topic ideas, and he said H.H. Holmes. I'm like, oh yeah, instantly. I'm like two-parter. I mean, I really wrote two-part and I typed
too much
it.
Stuff.
Yep. Yeah, because it's just endless. It's just crazy. And I like Sean said, and we there's gonna be stuff we didn't touch on because we could probably make this a four-parter. Mm. To be honest with you, I mean, if you really want to just go into every single thing, we just you know.
Now that since we brought up what was it Peitzel?
Peitzel
or Peitzel?
I've heard
Peitzel, Peitzel.
Benjamin Peitzel.
Holmes eventually ended up killing him too.
Yeah.
Since we're talking about him, just
and,
go ahead
and
get
his,
that out there.
And
you think
his
you'd
kids.
Know that you'd know better, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Peitzel's kids.
Yeah, and his kids.
I
yeah.
mean, just
and
again,
told
kids or adults. Nobody say
three of them, right?
Was it three? I know it's two.
Three
but
of the
four.
Five,
yeah. Or is it three of the five?
Okay,
three of the
okay.
five. Yeah,
yeah.
He told his widow, the widow of him, is that your husband's still alive and in hiding, and convinced her to travel with three of her five children. Who also became his victim.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, again, just to cover it up.
Yeah, his stuff ranged from Chicago to Texas, Toronto, Indiana, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. And he just kept going back and forth.
Well, I mean, he's running away from the law, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
They're
he's
on his
like,
heels.
Between his schemes, his
he
murder
goes,
castle.
He
was trying
state.
To build another murder castle down in
Fort
Worth,
yeah,
he said.
We'll get to that
yeah,
later,
well,
probably.
Be our next part, yeah. Yep.
He's a character.
Yeah.
Like Sean
yeah.
said.
That's good.
He's a dastardly fiend.
A dastardly fiend, this character.
I just want to keep saying that.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Death.
Dr. Death, yeah. What was the one I said my favorite is the Devil in the Windy City. Oh,
that's a pretty good
yeah.
one.
All of them are creepy.
Oh, yeah. They're
and
all fitting.
All,
they're all fitting.
And they're all fitting. You're
yeah.
right.
I still like Dr. Death the best.
Yeah. That dude was, that's all he was about was death and money.
Yeah.
You know, the death supplied him the money and just,
mm-hmm.
just greedy, greed and just, but yeah, that dude was born. Off his rocker. I mean,
well, and he had a normal childhood. There's,
yeah,
you know, yeah. growing up, nobody knew anything was going to happen.
Did you guys do any did you guys find anything about? Because you know, I listen to all these serial killers. Not every single one of them, but a lot of them, and these doctors and these you know psychiatrists and all the head injuries, head trauma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were 7 years old. Everything was fine. 7 years old. Had an accident, hurt now obviously, you know, I mean, kids, millions of kids hurt their head, you know, hit their head. They don't turn into serial killers,
mm-hmm.
but there's like different with these people, these guys and some women, that's a lot of what had happened. I mean, they, you know, how it affected them.
Or but abuse had, of some sort.
Well, and that could be
sexual abuse, right. Verbal abuse, mental abuse, sexual. I mean, or, the hitting, you know, head trauma. I didn't find that though. I didn't find that he had any type it's of possible. Physical trauma. No. You know, like hitting his head. Or,
everything I kept finding was they couldn't find any evidence to hold true to anything in his childhood. Everything that keeps coming up.
It'd be a total guess, but like his dad, if he was, you know, abusing him, you know, they used to box kids' ears, you know, that's that could certainly cause head trauma.
Yeah, I just listened to a podcast the other day.
Beethoven to go deaf. You know?
The guy was one of the craziest ones. I never heard of him again. He's a recent, he's from the 80s, you know, 1980s. But up until he was, I think he was 8, again, I mean, from birth to 8 years, but he had fallen, hit his head, and things started to kind of
jostled stuff loose.
It jostled but there's no abuse. And a lot of times it all goes together. It's abuse.
It can change your personality.
But the head trauma changed the way he, you know, he was in pain. It didn't make him think. So then it just made him not look at things the same and took it. But anyway, that's what they said it affected. But I didn't know if you guys had seen any research that he had any head trauma.
There can be negative effects, and then sometimes people bonk their heads or get struck by lightning, and they can do advanced math and be, you know, like Rain Man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I think so there was a study both ways. I saw on one channel, some program. I believe there was a study where they took like serial killer brains and, you know, looked at them and scanned them and, you know, just trying to figure out what makes them tick.
Yeah. Right. You know, and sometimes they don't have any head trauma. It's just strictly just they and not even abuse. There's some they had great.
H. Holmes.
Yep. It just what is the deal?
Yeah.
This is
his recreation, I guess. Weird.
I mean, I grew up playing sports and Atari and this guy. No. Yeah. But, and just wanted to, I don't know. That's some good material there to start out with.
That's a good foundation. We were trying to do a foundation, and I think we did a good foundation there.
That was a wow, yeah. And like I said, between the three of us, we got all kinds of stuff to talk about this guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's
one
so
question
much
we have to answer next one is: would we stay in the if it still existed, the murder castle? Would we have stayed?
I would
in
like
there?
To yes. tour it. I Gee, would love to. Live.
I'd love to. Oh, yeah, I know.
I don't know if I'd stay, but I'd definitely go and tour it and look at all the hidden passages.
Would you have stayed with HH?
No.
Yeah, that's a solid no.
No, I think I could take him.
Yeah, probably. Him. He's only 5. They said 5'7". Well, he we'll get really into that too. He's 5'7", what, 160 pounds?
Yeah.
So not a huge guy.
I'm going to tell you right now, though.
Devilishly handsome, though.
The guy had, he had the stash going.
Yeah,
That he is did. A man, that's a thick.
He was dead sexy.
All right, Austin.
I know, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just that's a great looking I'm looking at the picture that Nate has on his notes.
Yeah,
that's
phenomenal.
That is a thick, That's why I like, you know, like the you know, back like Tombstone.
Guy going somewhere.
Serious, you know, those big old thick mustaches. Mm-hmm. That
it's a handlebar mustache, yes.
He had it rocking, But, I mean, literally, like looking at him, nice suit, a top, I love the hat. You know,
he played the part.
Yep.
You know, dapper man.
Yeah, and he was just ready to kill you.
Yeah.
However he needed to do it, he's ready to take you out.
Had that twinkle in his eye.
And get some cash for you, you know.
Yeah.
But, so, guys, you want to wrap that up for part one of H.H. Holmes?
Sounds good.
So, as we said last time that we recorded, we have dubbed Sean's little segment, and it is officially called Middle-Aged Moment.
The Middle-Aged Moment, yes.
I'm going to turn it over to you for your Middle-Aged Moment.
Yes. So, it has a name, and we are going to continue it because I think it's had good reception with people, and I know it's been good for us. I think it's, you know, besides all this other fun stuff that we're doing and talking about, which we love doing, it's also kind of nice to take us out of some of that what we've been trudging through, and we're going to go through part two as well. Gets pretty dark, so it's kind of fun to get out and talk about some lighter stuff and some deeper in a different way stuff. So what I chose, so we're trying to come up with, you know, stories and poems and sayings and things like that kind of brighten your day. We talked about last time Maya Angelou and be a rainbow in somebody's cloud. So that's what we're trying, our podcast. I'm not trying to give us, you know, any kind of, you know, airy fairy fluffy stuff, but in a way it's kind of nice to have that injected in you from time to time. So I have actually kind of a couple of poems. These actually are pretty strong in their nature, and they really speak pretty highly of kind of the human condition. And the first one is by Dylan Thomas. And this one's probably pretty well known. Most people probably heard of this. If not, I'll be glad to introduce it to you. But this is talking about how we should live life and how we should really enjoy every second and not go quietly into death. And it is called Do Not Go Gentle Into the Good Night. So do not go gentle into the good night. Old age should burn and rave at the close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of the night, of the light, excuse me. Though wise men at their end know dark is right, because their words had forked no lightning, they do not go gentle into the good night. Good men, the last wave by, crying how bright, their frail deeds might have danced in a green bay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Wild men who caught and sang the sun in flight, and learned too late they grieved it on its way, do not go gentle into the good night. Grave men near death who see with blinding sight, blind eyes could blaze like meteors and be gay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. And you, my father, there on that sad height, curse, bless me now with your fierce tears, I pray. Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. I like that. That's always been one of my favorites. So the next one.
It's intense.
It is intense. Yeah. This next one, in a good way. This next one's pretty intense too, but it is by Rudyard Kipling, and it's called If. So Rudyard Kipling. Wow. I always find some fun ones, don't I? But it's called If. And it goes, if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken and stoop and build up and worn out with worn out tools. If you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss and lose and start again at your beginnings and never breathe a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are gone and so hold on, there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings, nor lose the common touch. If neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you, but none too much. If you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything in it, and which is more, you'll be a man, my son. Now, I like that one. That one's kind of cool because it talks basic. There's a stoic piece of advice there. And there's also kind of a non-interference of, I've always heard it. You talk about like the world. There's from a world stage to a local, to your family, to your work, all these different areas that you watch spin around and around and around. It's kind of like being in the eye of a hurricane. Mm-hmm. The world spins madly on, right? It spins outside and you're in that eye. You can decide to go out in that storm. And sometimes you do, you know, you have to, but a lot of times what this is talking about is stay in that eye as much as you can. Be the calm in the storm, mm-hmm. You know, be the person to bring other people into the eye and say, let's just calm down. Let's take a moment.
Yeah, and
I think the more people can get in the eye and stick together, that's what I try not to get too political or anything like that. But the idea of, I think every side, we just all need to be better. We all need to be good mm-hmm. to each other. But these are very powerful in that. The first one talking about how you burn like fire until, you know, death takes you, you know, don't go quietly. you know, is that whole idea, but get busy living or get busy dying.
Right.
And this other one is just talking about living, you know, it's okay to live a powerful life, but don't sit there and say, I'm powerful. You know, you know, a lot, some of the best leaders are the ones that you didn't even know they were leading. They're just that.
That's true.
They keep to themselves, and it's almost like a Taoist, you know, the Tao Te Ching is a book that talks all about that, you know, do without doing, and people will be amazed and think they did it, and it was actually you.
Yeah, just take a step back and, you know, not be the big savior or whatever, you know, but be there, be present, be strong, but, you know, don't try to be in front of everybody as I am who you should be following and listening to, you know.
What's kind of interesting is to be with the common man or to be with the kings. That's what it says, you know, it's talking about how, but it's okay to just, you know, to be, because do you want to be remembered? Like, how do you want to be remembered? Do you want to be remembered as, oh, that son of a gun, you know, like, oh, who wants to be around that guy? Or do you want to be known as a tyrant? Or do you want to be known as a philanthropist or somebody that had a lot of wealth? But we talked about that before, 10 years, 100 years, 1,000 years. How will people remember you, or will they at all, you know? So, and I hate to bring this back to H.H. Holmes, but good Lord, you know, like, look at what we're thinking, you know, with him. Yeah. You know, we have to remember him in this despicable way.
Just torturing, being mean.
But examining. I definitely don't want to be remembered that way.
No. Yeah, and there's just so many ways you can lead in a positive way. I mean, you know, you can. You don't have to be the browbeating. I mean, each his own. But I'm just saying, there's just all kinds of different ways you can show or be an example of what, whether it's being, you know, what a dad looks like, or a husband, or a friend.
That's for us, anyway, that's a big way to lead. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's in our own families and our children.
You don't have to be vocal and huge about it. Just be a good example.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I played ice hockey in high school. I was team captain my senior year, and I wasn't the loudest one. I wasn't the one yelling and screaming at guys, hey, let's do this, do that. You're not playing hard enough. I was the quiet one, but I led by example.
Yeah,
I played every practice and game, you know, with all my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't go unnoticed. They made me team captain.
And the ones that want to do good and learn, notice that. And then the knuckleheads that don't, okay, well, that's just too bad for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the ones that want to be better.
And then some of them get a lesson. They're like, well, why is he captain? He doesn't yell and scream, you know, and all this stuff. And
it's
because that's not him. What he does is by example. His actions speak louder than his words. And that's exactly who I am and who I was.
And you were mentioning ice hockey. I have all my crazy teams from college baseball to pro football and basketball. You know, everybody goes, how did you become an Arizona State baseball fan? Or then you've got Kentucky basketball. I got Georgia
There's
football.
There's a story.
I mean, I've got teams from everywhere in the nation. And I'm a Pittsburgh Penguins fan.
Yeah. Detroit Red Wings.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Sidney Crosby. Three Stanley Cups and MVPs, and he's not screaming and yelling constantly.
No, he leads by example.
He just does his job.
Yeah.
He elevates people. Mm-hmm. Sorry, John.
Oh, no, you're fine. You're fine.
He elevates his teammates by just what he does.
Yeah. And I'm playing good, so I expect you to play good with me.
He's not ripping into him and constantly just banging a stick at his team. Oh, you guys, you know. No, he does what he does, and then they want to match him, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they want to not match. They're gonna not gonna match him, but they're gonna play above their
play as hard as they can to.
And they appreciate him being that way. Yep.
When Nate's describing himself that way, what makes me think, and I mean this in all due respect, I see Nate as a gentle giant. You know, he's a big guy. Like if you met Nate and you didn't know him, or if he was mad, I'd be like, dude, do not make that guy mad. But no, I mean, I know you well enough.
I want to fight because of that.
You know, right. Because people
you don't want to fight him.
People
he's huge.
Will
He'll
back
kill you.
Down.
Yeah,
he's a big guy. It's like Andre the Giant. Andre the Giant said he never
do anything.
Andre the Giant never worked out a day in his life, but he could beat anybody in the room and then multiple. But yeah, Nate's the same way. And that is the presence. I always tried, especially my sons and my daughters the same way, is be that presence where you're the heart and soul of the team, you know, always, like you said, have our heart and soul into it. I think that's beautiful. And everything, you know, whether it be sports or your work or, you know, this, wherever your passions lie, you know, be that gentle giant. I think it's a really cool thing to be. I tend to have this like nervous energy or this excited energy, and I try not to overdo it. But I know in times of my life I have, you know, I've either scared people away or thought, oh God, that guy just never shuts up, or he's just too you know, it's a fake or it's a facade. And to me, it's like, okay, no, I can contain this a little more, but still be, mm-hmm. you know,
mm-hmm. be you.
Yeah, and exactly. So, but I think it's, and I've been in so many different situations where Nate does a great job of nobody else wants to take the lead. Nate will do it. And he will do it masterfully in the sense of you just feel comfortable. You're like, okay, Nate's got this. You know, something break, especially when something breaks down or bursts. Yeah, he's got it.
I mean, when I played ball, and then I've coached two or three teams, and you know, and being a dad, I'll call myself out. I can be a yeller. Mm-hmm. You know, I can get too intense, and it's because I care.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's why
I didn't care.
Yeah. If I was a coach, I'd be yelling. Yeah, that's why I don't coach.
You know, yeah. And it's not because I want people to be perfect. Because oh my gosh, I'm the farthest. I know the way it needs to be done. You know, whether it's my kids or I don't care, homework or their schoolwork. But I'm trying to be better at. Okay, I can get my message across. Not that I have to go. Okay, well, great guys, good job. I hope you do well. No, you know, I'm not. Gonna, right. I'm never gonna be that guy.
Yep. Yeah.
But I can kind of. I can tone it down, or I can bring the volume down,
yeah,
you know, a little bit more.
Don't be the Chris Farley in the party.
My dad used to always say, he was a big IU basketball fan. He loved Bobby Knight back in the day. Then he got tired of his antics as, you know, the years went on. But mm-hmm. he always said, and he said to me, he's like, don't listen to how they're saying it. Listen to what they're saying.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of players could get through those 4 years of rough Bobby Knight beating – because they were like, I always had to remember, I'm listening to what he's saying to me, yeah. not
he
how he's
very
saying.
Intense.
You know,
there are and some so people that respond to that well too.
Yeah,
yeah. If some can hack it. I probably couldn't have.
No,
I yeah. could. I, that's not my style. Mm-hmm. But you know, I don't want a coach or a boss or something. I go, oh, just well, you try, Todd. You know, great. No, I mean, if I, you know, but I don't want the when I'm good or
I think
bad.
There's got to be a balance.
Ripping yeah, into me constantly. There's got to be a balance, and I'm, yeah. you know,
I always try like when you're trying anyway. To instead of tearing somebody down completely, because that I've watched bosses and coaches, you know, just rip people into shreds, and it's like
you
left nothing mm-hmm. unless you really don't want that person to be around yeah. or to love baseball or to love their job right. or
unless it's
whatever
their last
doing.
Day that you're going to
yeah
be
and you really don't like this person but normally you hey I see you doing this or you know try to point out a couple positive things you got to yeah. find something right. positive in everybody just about everybody but start with that then it's like but I think you could work on this and that because as soon as you start cutting people down there people are shutting down or getting angry yeah, or whatever so you got to start with a couple positives anyway I know yeah. I've done that with certainly student evaluations and you know talking to other coworkers and things like that and people come to me the same way you know and I always appreciate that it's like okay yeah I'm not a complete failure so but yeah. no I know what you mean
I've always yeah. liked the you know treat others how you want to be treated I try
it's
to do that
it's the golden rule yeah, yeah. right
I know heard that before. All the time
I yeah. once or twice yeah and that, honestly that's yeah. like that would fix, and I'm not saying that it would fix everything, but I think it might just fix everything. Like if everybody just would treat each other, and treat yourself that way too. Treat yourself mm-hmm. how you want others to be treated, or how you want to be treated, and treat other people that way. And
by all means,
a lot of things would magically get better.
If you like yeah. being we'd, yelled at, then I guess that's what you're going to do to others. Yeah, but
right. we'd just be more accepting of each other, I think. Yeah. So.
Well, I think that was awesome. I like those two readings. Yay. And yeah. again, like Sean says, we hope you guys learn, but. Nate and I do.
Oh, yeah.
yeah, right.
Every time.
I think discussions, about, I think, are more for us than
yeah. I start with a question of, gosh, what do I need to hear? Yeah. And so I'm not saying these things like, I have it all figured out, and from my golden throne here, I can tell you exactly what I, you know, I don't
well,
know anything.
Well, just be honest. I know the listeners
I'm a work
can't
in progress.
See, but you've got your golden
I am sitting
on.
Higher than all
yeah.
of us, right?
And he's
I,
got like yeah. a real high back. Yeah.
We,
and
we put my the phone books underneath him.
yeah, my nose is slightly cocked.
Oh, yeah.
There.
Oh, he just comes in. You know, Nate's like, can I get your robe, you know?
I'm taking anyway. Over this podcast, dang it.
Wipe the sweat from your brow.
Yeah. Oh, you know, fanning him with the with the feathers and the
hey, yeah, that's we didn't have that tonight. I'm really upset
yeah,
about that.
Yeah, that was fun to think about. No, anyway, well, yeah, awesome. Thank you, Sean. And
no
so,
problem, my pleasure.
What announcements do we have before we wrap this up?
Well, one thing we want to do is tell you, number one, that we have our email that you can contact us at. You can contact us with any questions, and you can have show ideas and share your stories, which, of course, we would love to share on the podcast, if you have any. And, of course, we'll get your permission if you want us to use your name. But you can use that also for ordering merchandise, which now we have merchandise. Yay! So that's
or another
now.
Cool idea is... like a previous episode, if there's something that you know that we didn't say or you mm-hmm. think it's a pretty interesting bullet point, you know, mm-hmm. you let us know. We can yeah. shout it out True. Before the next episode or something.
Great. Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. Yeah, absolutely.
So you can always message us on Facebook, Instagram, or like I said, you can email us. And that's along with the merchandise as well. You can give us get in contact with us for your orders. We've already started to get that the some of the stuff has come in, and it's actually really good quality stuff. Mm-hmm. So we like it.
Yeah.
And like I already said, Instagram and Facebook. So you know how to find us there at Middle Age and Creeped Out. Please rate, review, subscribe to our podcast. It really does help. Really, 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 really does.
Can I say something real quick?
Yeah.
Not to cut you off.
We posted it today.
Yeah,
no, you're fine.
I posted that, and I know we've heard straight to our faces how people have enjoyed our podcast, and they're just happy for us, and they just love listening, and we greatly appreciate that. We get text messages, you know. I could get those all day long. I know Nate and Sean could get those all day long. We definitely appreciate it.
Yeah,
we totally appreciate it.
It makes us feel so good, and, mm-hmm. you know, boost our ego up, right? Yeah. And that's awesome, and so please don't stop doing that. However, though, I want to say, like my post did, what helps the show itself is the rating and review, because you can tell us all day long how you love our show and, you love this particular podcast, or you think we're just the best thing ever. That is great. Again, please listen to what I'm saying. We appreciate that, but if you really want to help the show itself, that's where the ratings and reviews come in, and that's why we say it every podcast. That's why I'm going to mention it every so often on Instagram and Facebook. It's because it helps us get found easier by future listeners, and it just kind of keeps going.
Who would have the same enthusiasm as you do as listeners.
Right. Right.
You know, and they exactly. just can't find it yet.
Yeah, and so that's why we say it's not to go, hey, look at how many ratings we have. Look how many reviews. We look at the numbers just because we're like, okay, the more we see is because now we know it's going to be found and it's going to move up the charts like we've said. But like again, we're not trying to take away the texting encouragement or you come up to one of us at work or whatever. You know, that's awesome. That helps. That just makes us feel good personally, you know.
Gives us
the good feels. Yeah. But the show itself, it gets benefited by the actual tapping on those stars,
yeah.
you know. And again, if you're not sure how to get it, now there's about three or four people that have said, I thought I did it, but I obviously didn't do it right because I'm like, I haven't found it, and they did it a week ago. Mm. Maybe it is tricky. I don't know. If you're having a hard time, ask somebody that might have iTunes or email us or message us, whatever, and mm-hmm. say, hey, what, where do I go? In the app, because I can tell you, you know, but it's if you're in the app and you got the I don't know what you call our picture or whatever, there's 5 stars. Of course, we'd love to ask for 5 stars, but you
right.
just literally click the 5th star and it'll say like, thank you, submitted. And then just scroll a little bit below the picture and it'll say, it literally says, write a review. Tap that. You put a header or a heading, you know, says awesome or great, whatever you want to put. I'm like, mm-hmm. and then it's got the little box and you can type as little or as much as you want. To what you think about us, and then again, I think it's either send or submit, and it gives you a confirmation, and then it usually shows up 24 to 36 hours as far as when we can see it. But again, we're so thankful for you guys listening and telling us, because it's, you know, Sean will say, hey, so-and-so came up to me at work and said, oh, you know, they love the show, or they think we're doing great. I'm like, that makes me feel really good,
right? Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, make sure they can rate and review, because that helps the show itself. That's why I'm saying
now, I know. I have Spotify. I do listen to it on iTunes too, so I'm capable of doing that stuff through iTunes, like you've said. But I do not think Spotify gives you the opportunity to
no,
rate
it
or
does
review.
Not been able to find it. No.
So some platforms you can't do it
exactly. And I know I thought I might have not. three or four episodes ago. I was hoping I said that, and that's so I'm glad you mentioned it. If I didn't mention it, literally it's pretty much iTunes itself to get on there to give us, if you want to actually rate and review. So if you're listening to, whatever, Stitcher, Spotify, it's, you know, so if you were like, if that's your preferred method, obviously listen to however you want to do it. I don't, obviously, because we appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And that goes towards our downloads. That they see those numbers too. Right. But as far as the rating review, I'm just going to ask you to take the extra time, maybe download iTunes or get on iTunes and tell us, give us a little rating review, and then delete it and go back to Spotify, how you want to live, or whatever it is.
One-time deal or whatever.
Yeah, but I'm glad you said that, because it is true. I think pretty much iTunes is
the biggest thing is we want to elevate the show. We're not doing this for money. We're doing this because we enjoy this.
We don't get money.
We're doing a community.
No.
We enjoy doing this, and so we want to keep doing this, and we want to become something that you guys come and feel comfortable with, because we feel comfortable sitting here and doing this and talking.
Enjoy the content with us.
Yeah, exactly. Enjoy this whole experience.
But we don't get paid for five stars and reviews.
I get 10 cents.
That's up for my three. I was just going to say, I had negotiated a little bit, but Nate is out negotiating me under the table. Yep. He's going to get the telephone books next.
Well, Nate, sorry, I was going to give you 11 cents.
Oh, dang it.
Son of a gun. But go ahead. Anyway. I just had to say that. So
I always want to thank everybody for their support and their listening.
Yes,
and that's what we're talking about, are the encouragement that we've gotten. We've had a couple people that are going to try to do some research for us.
Yeah.
Eileen, Tommy has said he'll help us out.
Jessica.
Yeah. So those three, we really want to say thank you.
Anyone else out there,
Tommy has also, he's reached out a couple times, said how much he likes the show. And I really appreciate him saying that. Back in our underground stuff, he was talking about, he had sent me a thing about the secret bunker for Eisenhower. Reminded him of the Greenbrier Hotel in West Virginia. It's a bunker set up that they keep Congress down under. So I thought, that's really cool. So I had told him I really appreciate that. But it's fun, that interaction with people,
they're
listening and they're interesting. Yeah. Yeah. So sharing those, interesting stories and interfacing with us, it's really fun. We really enjoy that.
Yeah, I love it. Thanks.
So we were talking about the different ways you can find us: iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher. Now you can find us. Stitcher's actually coming. I've been watching, people are actually using Stitcher to find us, and you can find it through episodes and shows now, which is great. So that's all fixed. Google Play and a host of other ones. The one thing we want to do every single show is give out the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Line, which is 1-800-662-4357. The last four on that is HELP. And then also the National Prevention of Suicide Lifeline is, the number for that is 1-800-273-8255. And the last four on that is TALK.
Awesome. Thank you. You nailed it every time. I'm telling you.
A few times, yeah.
Yeah. Just wait till we get to episode 100.
I'll just hit.
You won't even have to.
Yeah, I'll hit playback. Blah, 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 blah.
You'll have it memorized. No. Heck, you won't even have these notes that my wife
right. types
up. No, but thanks for doing that. Yeah, like Sean said, I know, Nate, we're so appreciative of your love and support and the kind words, and any rating and review is appreciated. We're just having a blast doing this. We like getting together. It's good, fun guy time, but we want to take you guys on this journey too. That was a good way to put it, Nate. And interaction on the Facebook page or Instagram, even better. So thank you to all the people that have joined the Facebook group, and appreciate our little memes and pictures and my dad jokes, my dad joke of the day. So
I enjoy that.
Now I'm going to, before I sign off, guys, this was episode 9. We will be bringing you episode 10, which is part 2 of our H.H. Holmes guy. Just to give you a little heads up, it'll be episode 9 will be dropped by at least tomorrow, and we might do episode 10, which would be the part 2, the next day. If not, if we have to skip and to do our next topic, which I won't say it yet, we would do part 2 for next week. So you guys will either find the two episodes, or the two parts, I should say, the two parts just a day apart, or
potentially a week.
Or potentially it could be part 2 could be next week. So you won't go a week without hearing any content. So either part 2 will be next week, or next week will be another topic. So I'll say that again on part 2. So I just want to kind of give you guys a heads up. But Anything else, guys?
Before I don't think so. I think I covered it.
No.
Nothing?
No.
I got nothing.
Ready to go for the part
spent
two.
Until number two, yeah.
Oh, man, I'm worn out for this guy. Say Jeff Jones, man, he wore me out the first time.
We're only halfway there.
All right. Well, yeah, that's scary, isn't it?
Halfway up the mountain.
Yeah, we're only halfway through this knucklehead.
The Holmes Mountain.
All right. Well, guys, thank you again for listening to episode 9. And until next time, creepies, Nate is our sound engineer. We are your hosts, Todd and Sean. And we are middle-aged.
And creeped out. Keep it creepy.